Within hours of the terrible attacks on 9/11, as plumes of heavy black smoke still rose from the twisted steel of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, conspiracy was on some people's minds. Today, 5 years later, the number of conspiracy theorists, or truth activists, as they prefer to call themselves, has grown. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Jim Meggs, the editor-in-chief of Popular Mechanics. He and the staff of that magazine recently wrote a book that debunks 9/11 conspiracies. We'd like to hear what you think. Why do conspiracy theories take hold and grow? And if you think the 9/11 attacks were part of a conspiracy, why? And if not, why not? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. We're joined first by Bob Goldberg, a professor of history at the University of Utah and the author of Enemies Within, The Culture of Conspiracy in Modern America. He joins us from member station KUER in Salt Lake City. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Neil. Nice to be here.
You yourself are not a conspiracy theorist, but you've studied the phenomena of conspiracies. Why do people, regardless of the conspiracy, whether it's the Kennedy assassination or Pearl Harbor or September the 11th, why do they want to believe they've been massively deceived by their own government?
I think conspiracy theories do a variety of things to Americans and other peoples around the world. In a time of crisis, in a time of trauma, conspiracy theories order the random. They provide clarity to ambiguity. They give hope and they give meaning to an event. And when people are traumatized, when people are in crisis, they seek to know, why did this happen? Who is responsible? And conspiracy theories give those names. They provide dates. They assign blame. And they provide, if you will, a power to listeners in order to deal with the problems.
Of course, we should acknowledge that there was a conspiracy to commit the attacks on 9/11. It was Osama bin Laden and other members of al-Qaeda and the 19 men who died on those planes after taking them.
Absolutely. And this was a conspiracy, and history is peppered with conspiracies. Abraham Lincoln was killed in a conspiracy. Enron was involved in a conspiracy. Julius Caesar was killed in a conspiracy. And these kind of conspiracies give light and give power to those people who argue even more to the idea of conspiracy.
Well, Bob Goldberg, stay with us, if you will. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Jim Meggs, the editor-in-chief of Popular Mechanics, discuss some of the theories and some of the debunking of those theories. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and here are the headlines from some of the other stories we're following here today at NPR News. Four military judge advocate generals told a House panel that they have serious concerns with President Bush's revised proposal for how to deal with military detainees. They object in particular to the use of evidence obtained under coercion. And the Iraqi parliament nearly erupted into violence today. Guards had to be called in to end an angry dispute over the issue of regional autonomy. Live television coverage was cut off. Later, the session was abruptly adjourned. You can hear details on those stories and much more coming up later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow, it is Science Friday. Ira Flatow will be here with a look at the future of cancer treatment, from gene therapy for melanoma to cataloging colon cancer genes, plus a talk with preeminent biologist and Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Edward O. Wilson. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation Science Friday. Right now, we're talking about some of the conspiracy theories that have spawned since September the 11th. Our guest is Rob Goldberg, professor of history at the University of Utah and author of Enemies Within, The Culture of Conspiracy in Modern America. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And before we go to editor Jim Meggs of Popular Mechanics, I did want to ask you one more question, Bob Goldberg.
Sure.
Some of the people involved in these investigations, these truth seekers, as they call themselves, academics, former military officials, deputy attorney general of various states, distinguished people. Does that sort of membership surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me at all, because what we find is that conspiracy thinking in American history has not been a fringe phenomenon. It's a mainstream phenomenon. When I think that upwards of 75% of Americans believe that John Kennedy was killed in an assassination, we're talking about the mainstream. So what we find is that conspiracy thinking crosses class lines, race lines, educational lines, all lines, again, to infiltrate the mainstream.
Well, joining us now is Jim Meggs. He's editor-in-chief of Popular Mechanics, which published an essay in March of 2005 called 9/11 Debunking the Myths. Ever since, it's been the most popular link on that magazine's website and was the basis for the publication's book Debunking 9/11 Myths. And Jim Meggs joins us from the studios at Carnegie Hall in New York City. Thanks very much for coming to join us today.
Great to be here, Neil.
And why did Popular Mechanics decide to tackle this issue?
Well, you know, this started back in the fall of 2004. I was looking at the New York Times, and I came across an ad for one of the major conspiracy books, a book called Painful Questions. And it alleges that there must have been some kind of explosives in the World Trade Centers. And it listed a bunch of kind of hardcore concrete facts, like the idea that jet fuel doesn't burn hot enough to cause the failure, melt the beams in the World Trade Center. So there must have been some other explanation for how they fell. And I thought, well, you know, Popular Mechanics is a magazine that's covered how buildings are built and what happens when airplanes crash and topics like that for over 100 years. If there's even a grain of truth to any of these claims, then something people should look into. And I thought, okay, we will, you know, to kind of fact check these claims that you see in the conspiracy theories and see if we can get to the bottom of them. If there's something there, let's look into it. If they don't hold up, then maybe we can help put people's minds at rest a little bit.
If there's a grain of truth in there, that's the story of the century.
Well, but in some cases, you know, the way conspiracy theorists often work is they ignore the vast body of historical evidence, and they zero in on a few small details that they think contradict the mainstream view. So, for example, they might say that the hole in the Pentagon is too small to have been made by a jet. And so, you know, that's a very literally a concrete question. It's a reinforced concrete building. And so we looked into it and found that, in fact, the hole is a little bit smaller than the full wingspan of the aircraft, but completely consistent with the impact of the crash. And of course, you know, hundreds of people saw it hit as well. I mean, you have some kind of obvious evidence that often gets overlooked by the theorist. But the something like that question of was Flight 93 hit by a missile? Was it shot down by the U.S. government? I think most people would say, well, you know, it's somewhat plausible. I mean, and if people are asking questions, they have a right to answers, and we really support that. And people have a lot of questions about 9/11. They're not satisfied that our government did everything it could have done to protect us. And I think that, you know, we don't the conspiracy theorists call themselves skeptics. Well, we're in favor of skepticism, real, genuine journalistic or scientific skepticism that looks hard at facts but also listens to the answers and moves on once a question's been settled.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get some listeners involved in this conversation. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And we'll begin with Hugh. Hugh's calling from San Francisco.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I've looked at all of these theories, or many of the theories, both the official version and the conspiracy theories. And I'll tell you the main reason why I remain skeptical of the official version of events is building number 7, which is the third building that also fell on that day. And, you know, I've noticed a lot of people don't even know that 3 buildings fell that day. But there was a third building, building number 7, and you know, I've never seen a convincing explanation for how that building fell, and I'm wondering if Jim Meggs can give me some explanation. There were fuel fires in the basement. I just don't see that is enough to cause a tall building like that to collapse.
That was the third World Trade Center, World Trade Centers 1 and 2 and 7, a smaller but still very large building. Jim Meggs, go ahead, please.
Yes, absolutely, and that's something we devote quite a bit of space to in our book. And, you know, there's some legitimate questions there. FEMA did a kind of rushed early report on the collapses, and they at that time weren't able to completely pinpoint the exact sequence of failures that that led to the collapse of that building. And that kind of opened the door. You know, conspiracy theories love a vacuum, and any time that you can't explain something, you'll have a lot of people rush in and say, well, if you can't say exactly how the building fell, there's only one other solution. Someone must have blown it up.
Well, that's the Sherlock Holmes theory. If, you know, if there's no other plausible explanation, then the implausible must be the explanation.
Right. But, you know, but let's slow down for a second and make sure we get all our facts together. There was another much more in-depth investigation going on by NIST, and the results of that will be out in a couple of months, but they've shared a lot of their findings as they go along. And what they discovered, first of all, is that the World Trade Center 7 was far more damaged by falling debris from the North Tower than was initially thought. About 25% of the south wall of the building was taken out. Secondly, those fuel fires weren't just in the basement. They were on upper floors of the building, in particular I believe it was the sixth floor. And the most damning thing, we talked at length in our Office of Popular Mechanics the other day with Vincent Dunn, the retired deputy fire chief for the city of New York, who's the author of the textbook, The Collapse of Burning Buildings. And he explained that that building is so unusual in its design. Instead of the vertical beams terminating in the foundation, many of them terminate in these broad horizontal trusses that span the width of the building, because the building was basically hollow from the sixth floor down. It was built over this big Con Ed substation. So those trusses carry these enormous loads, far, far higher than we would see in a typical skyscraper. The combination of the falling debris, which greatly stressed the structure, raised the strain on these trusses, and then these fires that were fed, in one case, by a pressurized diesel fuel line that raged for 7 hours. In the current thinking of the engineers who've investigated is more than enough to explain the collapse of the building. And, in fact, when those trusses failed, what you would have seen was exactly what we did see, which is the building almost collapsing from the inside first. So, you know, people say it looks like a professional demolition. Well, it turns out that most buildings, when they fall down, look like a professional demolition, because that's what happens when you remove the vertical support of a building. It collapses in on itself.
Q, does that satisfy you? There's probably much more. I know there's much more in the book and on the website. I guess Hugh has left us. Anyway, thank him for the call. Here's an email from Paul. Two good reasons for turning to conspiracy theories. One, official explanations are often unsatisfying, swathed in secrecy and riddled with cover-ups. And two, real history teaches us that many such things and worse have, in fact, happened in the past and only come to light much later.
Well, you know, as I said, we support skepticism. People should be skeptical. They shouldn't take everything they hear from the government or any other source at face value. But, you know, your previous caller said something interesting. He said that, you know, there's reason to doubt the official version. Well, there's no single official version of 9/11. I mean, our view of 9/11, much like our view of science and history and a lot of other topics, is a broad consensus of many people who've examined it. Yes, you have the 9/11 Commission report, but that's just one examination. You have engineering firms, architects. You've had journalistic organizations, NPR, The New York Times. Journalists from all over the world have examined this from just almost an infinite number of angles. And so the consensus view, the mainstream view, isn't the product of, you know, the Bush White House or you know, some cabal. It's stitched together from a whole variety of sources. And I don't think that process is done. We should be asking questions and looking into anything that doesn't quite fit or anything that we think you know, might not have been fully told. And no doubt there's any number of people in the government from this and previous administrations who perhaps would prefer that all the details about the failure to plan, the failure to anticipate, the failure to deal with these threats, you know, that those failings were numerous. And it wouldn't surprise me a bit if a couple of people have sort of sidestepped the full and painful reality of those issues.
Mm-hmm. Bob Goldberg, let me ask you, we have ourselves in a situation where obviously the principal pretext for going to war in Iraq was weapons of mass destruction, which we were assured, slam dunk, they were there, they were not. Do you think that people are more skeptical of their government today than they used to be?
I do believe that, Neil. And referring back to that caller, we have been trained in the 20th century by two powerful teachers to believe in conspiracies. The first is the media, whether it's Hollywood or television, which has constantly entertained us with images of conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Conspiracies are real, they exist, they're powerful, and they seek to do us harm. And our other teacher has been the federal government. The federal government has, for decades, played the conspiracy card against communists in the 1950s, against black and student radicals in the 60s. We heard of a vast right-wing conspiracy in the 1990s. So we have been taught to believe in conspiracies. The federal government, when it has its policies of secrecy, also creates the atmosphere. Wherever there is a secret, there is a rumor. And then we have, at least since Vietnam, a sense of a trail of deception, that there have been cover-ups. We've been kept from knowing the news. We've been kept from knowing important information, which extends to this day, that the government has led us through Vietnam, through Watergate, through Iran-Contra, and now into Iraq with stories that don't seem believable. And that has led us to be suspicious, and it's created this culture of fear in this country.
We're talking with Bob Goldberg, a professor of history at the University of Utah, author of Enemies Within, The Culture of Conspiracy in Modern America, and with Jim Meggs, the editor-in-chief of Popular Mechanics, which has published a book that challenges the conspiracy theories about 9/11. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Bill on the line. Bill calling from Bend, Oregon.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air, Bill.
Yes, I'm a first-time caller. I've listened a lot of times, but I wanted to say that the problem here is not with conspiracy theories. The problem is the official explanation, as with science. Have to look at the temperatures involved and so forth. I would suggest looking at the Scholars for 9/11 Truth website. You've got some very renowned physicists and scientists who know that there is only one explanation for the collapse of the three buildings, and that is controlled demolition.
Mm-hmm.
Science and controlled demolition are the only thing that explains those collapse. These aren't theories. These are hypotheses that can stand the test of science. I wanted to put one more plug in. Read David Ray Griffin. He's a man of integrity, great intelligence. He's a theologian. And he's dedicated the rest of his life to exposing this. It's a false flag event. Thinking people everywhere know that. We know that. We aren't just suspicious. We know because we've examined the evidence. Well, and I'll sign off.
All right, Bill. Thanks very much. And the thing he says about the temperatures, jet fuel burns at a temperature far below that which is required to actually melt steel, which was the girders of the World Trade Center.
That's absolutely correct, and this is an example where a tiny grain of truth can feed a great misconception. It's true that jet fuel doesn't burn hot enough to melt steel, but if you look at the design of the World Trade Centers, the girders didn't need to melt. They only needed to lose some of their strength, and there were a number of steps to this. First of all, you had fully loaded full fuel loads on. Modern aircraft striking the buildings at extremely high rates of speed, carrying 10,000 gallons worth of fuel. They severed the vertical support beams on the outside of the structure and also damaged the internal core. Between the outside wall and the internal core, there was no support for that structure. You had 60-foot spans of concrete floors held up with these very thin steel trusses. It was a revolutionary design for its time. And when we talked to the New York City Fire Department, one thing they stressed was the building was poorly designed to cope with high levels of fire. And when those planes hit, they hit at an angle. So they sprayed fuel across 6 floors and 8 floors of the structures, igniting fires across these vast open floors that were essentially not fightable from a professional firefighting point of view. And then they ignited all the other materials in those buildings. It wasn't the jet fuel per se. That actually burned off relatively quickly. But those ignited fires with the furniture and rugs and computers and everything else that's in a modern office, there's a great deal of fuel in any modern office. That was the heat that ultimately damaged the structure. It caused the floors to sag, the metal to expand and creep. And at about 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit, steel has lost roughly half of its strength. And you had about 90,000 tons or more above the impact point in the tower. All that weight bearing down on the severely compromised structure that had raging fires across 6 floors. You can see in the pictures, we have pictures on our book that show the outer beams starting to distort and pull inwards. They're being actually pulled in by the sagging floors as they lose strength and begin to sag. You can actually see the top of one of the towers begin to deform and tilt in the last minutes before the structure finally failed. And once that failure began, it was a chain reaction. There was nothing to slow it down. You had the weight of all those floors bearing down. And if you notice carefully, the collapses started at the impact points. You know, we talked to a lot of demolition people. You'll notice that in the Scholars for 9/11 Truth, there aren't any people who work in demolition or structural engineering. We talked to demolition people, and they immediately said, well, you wouldn't do it that way. You wouldn't start up at the top, and you would start at the bottom. And the things that people say look like squibs, and it's typical of conspiracy theorists that they use a lot of technical jargon to lend an air of kind of authority. So you hear a lot about squibs and other demolition technology. Those are jets of dust, you know, crushed sheetrock and other things that are being pushed out of the building. It's like a giant accordion as it comes down. So all that air has to go somewhere, and it follows the weak points, going down elevator shafts, stairwells, and ultimately blasting out windows at various points down the structure in a way that, you know, to the untutored eye does look, or even to somebody who's seen a professional demolition, it doesn't look that different, honestly. That doesn't mean that it was a professional demolition. It means that it turns out that's the way it looks when a giant skyscraper falls.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Jim Meggs, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Jim Meggs is the editor-in-chief of Popular Mechanics. He joined us from the studios of Carnegie Hall in New York City. Bob Goldberg, appreciate your time today, too.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Bob Goldberg, a professor of history at the University of Utah, author of Enemies Within: The Culture of Conspiracy in Modern America. He was with us from the studios of member station KUER in Salt Lake City. I'm Neil Conan. Ira Flato will be here tomorrow with Science Friday. We'll see you Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.